This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good morning. I'm giving you a pre-publication briefing on findings from some research which we've just completed within the NSPCC, looking at the prevalence of child maltreatment in the United Kingdom. Some of you may have read a report that we published, over 10 years ago now, in 2000, which was one of the biggest studies in the United Kingdom at the time on the prevalence of child maltreatment. What we decided to do is that because that the data for that study was collected now, about 12 or 13 years ago, we collected the data between 1998 to 1999, we wanted to get some up-to-date information because obviously knowing how many children in the community are experiencing maltreatment is an essential element of our work. How do we know how we can reach out to those children if we don't know? How many of them don't tell people about their maltreatment, or how many of them basically have what they're experiencing covered up by adults? So what we wanted to do in this research is that we wanted to get some current information because a lot has changed in children's lives in that 12-year period. We also wanted to be able to see whether or not there had been any change in the 12 years since we conducted the first piece of research. Because the research literature has moved on significantly in that period of time, we wanted to be able to have measures of child maltreatment that would give us information that would allow us to do some cross-national and comparative research so that we had agreed measures that were similar to what other people are doing in research studies currently underway across the globe. And we wanted to not just count levels of child maltreatment in the community, but we wanted to be able to build into our information and our database some information that would give us the ability to do some additional research looking at key risk and protective factors associated with levels of maltreatment so that we could use those findings to inform our preventive activities. The final thing that we wanted to achieve from this research was to be able to do some in-depth follow-up interviews with young adult survivors of maltreatment to find out their views on helpful and unhelpful sources of support when you're living with abuse. So I'll just tell you a little bit about what we did. I'm only giving you a very brief snippet of some of the early findings today. But the study itself is a very large study, and there will be a programme of research activity coming out of this. So for the survey part of the research, we did a UK household survey, randomly sampling households using the postcode address file. The research was conducted between March 2009 and the end of November 2009. We used traditional crime survey techniques to conduct the interviews with people in households. We used what's called computer-assisted self-interviewing techniques and or CASI, and audio CASI techniques for interviewing the children and young people who were involved. We had, altogether, we achieved 6,196 interviews, of which 2,160 were with parents or guardians of children under the age of 11 years. 2,275 were children between the ages of 11 and 17 years, and we also interviewed their caregivers about family life, health, income, and things like that. And as in the last survey, which the NSPCC did, which was based on young adults, we interviewed 1,761 young adults retrospectively, asking them about their experiences of maltreatment in childhood, and also asking them some questions that we had asked them in the previous survey, 21 questions altogether that we just doubled up in the second survey so that we could see whether or not there had been any changes in that period of time. So the we wanted to try and use, as far as possible, validated measures of maltreatment and also of impact. So our measures of maltreatment were based on 39 questions taken from something called the Juvenile Victimisation Questionnaire, developed by Sherry Hamby and David Finkelhor. And we also used validated measures of age-appropriate validated measures of trauma impact for the children and young people, and also a 14-item delinquency score and measures of parenting capacity, etc., within the research. Our overall response rate was 60.4%, which is quite respectable nowadays for a household survey. When we looked at the population and the demographic aspects of our sample, the respondents were broadly similar to the UK population in terms of, you know, gender, ethnicity, income, etc. But all the data that we're presenting today has been weighted to adjust for any survey or group differences. I haven't got time to talk to you about the ethical issues, and I'm very happy to answer the questions. There were considerable ethical issues in conducting this research, because this is the first time that the NSPCC has actually asked children directly in their homes about such a sensitive topic. I will just flag up for you that we benefited considerably from testing out what we wanted to do beforehand, from using guidelines from organisations like ISPSCAN and human rights organisations, from conducting consultations, and throughout the project we had an international group of experts advising and monitoring the work. We also set up and tested a red flag and review process for children who are in immediate danger. So just moving on very briefly to look at our findings. I wanted to start with what is potentially good news for you, because some of the findings are maybe surprising and bleak. When we looked at the young adults' responses and compared the 21 questions we asked them with 2009 with the questions we'd asked young adults in 1998 to 1999, we did some analysis with somebody called Dr. Stephen Collishaw from the University of Cardiff, whose area of work is looking at children's well-being over time. And from this analysis, we looked at the changes over the time, and also looked at whether or not the changes had had greater impact upon children from specific groups of the population, such as children from lower-income families. Adults. These are adults talking retrospectively. So comparing the findings from 2009 with 1998, we found some statistically significant differences in many areas in terms of their responses to questions on maltreatment. The area where we didn't find any decline in the response rates was in relation to neglect, which is an interesting issue. We found that physical violence during childhood had declined from 13% to 10%. That what the young adults reported in terms of prolonged verbal aggression declined from 14.5% to 6% in 2009. And coerced sexual acts under the age of 16 showed a similar statistically significant decline from 6.8% to 5% in 2009. There could be a number of reasons why we may have these findings, and we need to bear in mind that when the questions were asked in 2000, some of the things that children experience today maybe didn't happen then. So things like grooming on the internet, mobile phone harassment, trafficking, are questions that we could not ask in 2009 because they were not considered to be problems in children's lives in 1998 to 1999. So we need to be cautious about what the findings are telling us, but there is some scope, we think, for some cautious optimism. When we looked at the findings in relation to children from lower income groups, we found actually that the changes were more marked for those children. So we didn't find any evidence for increasing polarisation in terms of their experiences of abuse from this data, which is possibly optimistic. We can only speculate as to what the causes of these changes are, though, because, again, the survey would not tell us that. So just moving on to look at some of the findings from the children. Now, we've got findings I'm going to present to you because it's comparable with what they have in the international literature. The findings for under-18s And this means that to do this, we're combining the findings for what parents and caregivers said about children under the age of 11 with the findings from what the 11 to 17-year-olds who were children said themselves about their experiences of abuse. And we have findings for lifetime rates and past year rates. The past year rates are the most accurate for giving you an indication of the current levels of need. I am able to say that actually for the majority of children and young people, it very much looks like the majority have safe and happy childhoods, but there is a large minority who don't. So what you have in this slide are the under 18 rates, which are the combined rates for the under 11s and the 11 to 17s. The green figures in brackets, just to give you an indication of what children themselves said between the ages 11 to 17. Those are the figures in green for you. Just in case you're interested as to whether or not parents will be accurate reporters on their children's experiences of maltreatment, the research literature suggests that, yes, it is the case that there might be some things that parents don't know about, sexual abuse of a younger child. And we found from our research when we looked at the differences between what parents reported for children at age 10 and what children reported themselves at age 11, there were differences there in terms of non-contact sexual abuse. So things like exposure, which perhaps a child may not have told a parent about. But we did not find major differences between the reports from 11-year-olds and the reports from parents for children at the age of 10. And actually, the reports from parents seem to be quite accurate. And we need to bear in mind, of course, that it's not just the parent who's telling us about their children's experiences that is necessarily the perpetrator, because there are other people that maltreat children. So looking at our findings on child maltreatment for the under-18s, we found that 3.9% of children and young people under 18 had reported some experience of direct physical, sexual or emotional abuse or neglect by a parent or guardian in the past 12 months. 14.1% had reported maltreatment by a parent or guardian during their childhood. We calculated what types of maltreatment might be considered to be severe by taking into consideration things like the frequency of the experience over lifetime, whether or not harm or injury had resulted, the potential for harm or injury from things like use of weapon, what the criminal law says, whether or not the young person defined it as an abusive experience. So taking these things into consideration, we found that 11% of children had experienced severe maltreatment during childhood from any perpetrator, adult or child. 8.4% had been severely maltreated by a parent or guardian. And again, the past year figures for this are 2.2% were severely maltreated and had experienced maltreatment in the past year. If you extrapolated these figures to the population of the United Kingdom, you can see that there are many more children that are likely to experience some level of child maltreatment than appear in official records on child protection referrals or child protection plans or child protection registers across the United Kingdom. There's 46,000 children subject to a child protection plan or on a child protection register across the United Kingdom. And the data for past year rates for maltreatment are 12 times more. No matter which way you slice the data, basically what we're looking at is a lot of children that we probably are not on the radar of child protection services. So just looking at the types of family maltreatment, I don't think we want to put children's experiences into neat boxes. One of the difficulties with the research literature to date on child maltreatment is that they've looked at one specific area. So they focused on just physical violence or just on sexual abuse, less often on children's experiences of neglect and also of emotional abuse. And for a lot of children, actually, you know, living with maltreatment is experiencing a pattern of behaviour, and you very rarely see the child being neglected without also experiencing emotional abuse of some kind. So very often these things go together. But just to give you an indication of the types of maltreatment that children had experienced, we found that neglect was the most frequently reported. It was 8.4% of under 18s having experienced neglect in childhood. But as was said earlier, neglect is a very difficult thing to measure in the context of a survey because it is a process and a condition and not a one-off event that can be easily counted. If we look just at physical neglect, the rates are very much lower. It's about 1.4% for just physical neglect, if you're counting things like not having enough food to eat or a safe place to stay. 5% of the children have been emotionally abused during their lifetimes. 3.6% had reported physical violence from a parent or guardian, and that's excluding smacking or physical discipline. The figures for physical discipline and physical punishments were, not surprisingly, very much higher. 41.6% had experienced physical punishment. The rates of sexual abuse from a biological parent were actually relatively low. We only had 0.1% reporting contact sexual abuse from a parent or guardian. 14.2% had been exposed to parental domestic violence. Just move on quickly to talk about sexual abuse because I have to watch the time. The findings on sexual abuse, again, perhaps won't surprise you if you're aware of the literature. It was adults known or related to the child, as well as peers who were mostly known to the child, who were the most common perpetrators. Peer perpetrators were the most often mentioned in relation to sexual abuse. So we found that 7.3% of the under-18s had experiences of sexual abuse by either adults or peers. That's one in 14. 4.1% had been sexually abused in the past year. The numbers for experiencing forced contact sexual abuse were a little lower. One in 50 had experienced that in their lifetimes. But we have much, much lower rates reported for the under-11s than we do have for the 11 to 17s, as you can see from the green figures. And it was peers, including young people's intimate partners, who were the most frequently reported perpetrators, being responsible for almost 66% of forced contact sexual abuse of children under the age of 18. I think there are very clear messages here for prevention and promoting respectful and safe relationships amongst children and young people from these findings. There are also important messages in terms of age-related risks, and this has cropped up already this morning. What we found was that the risk of maltreatment and different types of victimisation experience from different types of perpetrator vary with the age and the development of the child. So that what a child is, the risks that children are exposed to vary across the life course, and that's a bit obvious really, isn't it? Because a baby under two doesn't tend to go down to clubs and run the risk of being raped by a person that they've met. So this illustrates this pattern of lifetime victimisation, I think fairly graphically. You probably can't see the legend, actually, but I'll just highlight some of the... The top chart is all forms of victimisation, and because we're looking at everything from community violence here through to sibling abuse, through to bullying in schools, it's not surprising that a lot of children and young people have experienced that. So that's what the top line is. The pink line, which is the second one, is peers. So experiencing some form of violence or bullying from peers is the second line on the graph. And you can see how the rates tend to increase for older children. The next line you will see is the light blue, which is sibling victimisation, which tends to peak at ages 6 to 8 and then decline. And then you will see the dark blue line down in the bottom cluster of lines here, which is sexual victimisation, which is including contact and non-contact sexual victimisation. And you can see for those bottom lines, which are intimate partner victimisations, it's sexual intimate partner victimisation, parent maltreatment, contact and contact sexual abuse, that you have an upward trend for those experiences in the teens, including an upward trend in maltreatment from a parent or guardian. And we found that the rates were 3%, if you average the rates out for 9 to 11-year-olds, for parent-to-child maltreatment. And for 12 to 14-year-olds, the rates were 6.5% for past-year rates of child maltreatment. I think, again, we've got a very important message here in terms of protecting adolescents and targeting. When we're thinking about targeting resources and talking about early intervention, that we remember the needs of adolescents. OK, I need to speed up a little bit. Just looking a little bit at impact. We wanted to look at associations between trauma impact, delinquency and experiences of maltreatment. And Dr. Helen Fisher from King's College helped us with this analysis. What we found was that experiences of victimisation tend to accumulate over childhood, and the most victimised children and young people tended to show the highest trauma and the greatest behavioural impact. They're much more likely to be in the groups of children who are showing trauma symptoms or delinquent behaviour. And again, we can illustrate this by looking at the standardised trauma scores for children and young people. If the older the child, the more likely they are to have multiple experiences of maltreatment and victimisation. So if they're maltreated at home, they're more likely then to be sexually victimised and to experience intimate partner violence, or to be victimised in their communities and bullied at home. For this graph is showing you that for children with the greatest number of victimisation experiences, you have the greatest, the highest level of trauma symptoms. So the children that have 15 plus experiences of victimisation showed the, by far the worst outcomes. We wanted to look at this most victimised group of the population by looking at the group that's sometimes referred to as the polyvictimised. They're a very highly vulnerable group of children and young people who are experiencing maltreatment at home, bullying at school, and also violence in their communities, and sometimes are also showing high levels of delinquency, particularly the girls. And we looked at the characteristics of this group of children and young people, taking, again, age-related measures. And we found that they tended, the children who were the most victimised tended to be older. They tended to have special educational needs or long-standing disability or illness. They tended to have a lot of other adversities, non-victimisation adversities, so things like bereavement, poverty, a parent in prison, and so on. And they tended to have a parent with enduring physical learning or psychiatric problems. So these are children who've got a lot of things happening in their lives and deserving of special attention in terms of safeguarding and caring for their well-being. So just to sum up, we found some evidence from young adults of a decline in some forms of maltreatment since we conducted the first piece of research. We found that children and parents report rates of maltreatment, treatment of under-18s, that are considerably higher than those known to official sources. That maltreatment and victimisation experiences vary developmentally over the life course and present the greatest... And although all forms of victimisation potentially are harmful, again, that's a big prevention message from this research, the greatest impact is for child maltreatment, sexual abuse, and also for physical violence. The impact of victimisation seems to be cumulative, so that children who are maltreated are most likely to be in that highest risk group in terms of poorer outcomes. And there are a small group of children who experience multiple forms of victimisation who are particularly vulnerable. And I'll just put one slide up for implications, but I won't talk to it because I think we've run out of time. I think probably our implications fit in very much with some of the things that we've talked at already in terms of identifying and equipping professionals and actually communities to be able to respond to some of the more challenging bits of engaging with children who are most likely to be at risk. Thank you.